Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. It is primary day in the state of Florida. It is Congressional Special Election Day in Oregon. But our good news can't come from Florida, Jim. We'd love it to, but the tone of this campaign in Florida has just gotten to the point where the only good news is that it'll be over soon, at least in Florida. But our good news today is actually on one of the bellwether Senate races that conservatives and Republicans will need to regain a majority and finally fire Harry Reid, at least from the majority leader position. The poll we look at today is from the state of Montana. This is a state that traditionally bends a little bit towards the right, but right now they have two Democratic senators. One of them is John Tester, who narrowly won in 2006, which was a big Democratic year. Denny Rehberg, who's been the Republican at-large congressman for the entire state of Montana, now has an 11-point lead there, 53-42. And so there's, I think, a couple of good things here. Number one, his congressional district is the entire state, so there's not a lot of name recognition that he needs to work on there. And secondly, with, what are we at, 9 months to go? There's only 5% of the state that seems to be undecided in this poll. So 53-42, looking pretty good for Rehberg in a state that we definitely expect to win if we have any shot at getting the majority back.
Absolutely, Greg. And it's an observation, you know, sometimes the good martini isn't all that surprising. This looked like it was going to be a good pickup opportunity for the Republicans. Tester won in 2006 largely because Conrad Burns had been tainted by the Abramov scandal and a couple other circumstances, you know, kind of circumstances that were kind of unique to the weaknesses of Burns. It's not that Montana has suddenly become this great Democratic stronghold. And so, you know, basically once you put up a solid Republican like Rehberg up against Tester, lo and behold, you know, these states start shifting back to what you'd expect it to be. The only other kind of thing worth noting here is that you notice in all those kind of upper mountain, upper Midwest states, your North Dakota, your South Dakota, your Montanas, you actually have much lower unemployment rates than a lot of other parts of the country. And some of this is because of energy extraction and shale and fracking and all the various forms there. Some of it's because of agriculture. Some of it's just because you just haven't seen the housing boom and bust that you saw in some other states. So it's kind of nice to see that a Republican challenger can run and run well against a Democratic incumbent, even in a state where unemployment is not as disastrous as it is in, say, Nevada or California or Michigan or some of these other hard hit states. So obviously still early, a lot of road to go, but you know, you got to feel pretty good about the chances of Denny Rehberg right now.
Yeah, I certainly do too. And Tester really hasn't helped himself. I mean, he's bucked the party a little bit on certain issues related to land and perhaps even the Second Amendment, but he was right there in lockstep on Obamacare, on the stimulus, and a lot of these other big government items that the Obama administration was pushing, and that dog don't hunt, as Herman Cain likes to say, in places like Montana. And so good for the people there to be paying attention. You mentioned the pretty decent economy compared to other places in Montana and the Dakotas. Unfortunately, the national economy, we can't say the same about, despite all the rosy projections and statements made by the president about a week ago in a State of the Union message. The Congressional Budget Office projecting that this year we will once again have over $1 trillion in deficit. $1.1 trillion is the projection there. They say unemployment will probably not get below 8% this year or next, and they expect this year's economic growth to be a whopping 2%. And you know how positive Jim and I were on the 1.7% that was revealed for 2011. So, Jim, this really great economic boom that the president was talking about, I don't know if that's in a different country, in his own imagination, or what's going on, but it's clear that this is not the huge ramp up in an election year that he was hoping would mirror what Ronald Reagan had going back in the 80s.
2% economic growth. Celebrate good times. Come on. Yeah, I'll refrain from singing in any further editions of the Three Martini Lunch. You and I have been talking about the concept of us bouncing along the bottom, or the idea of very modest growth, incremental growth here and there, but you know, nothing resembling a robust you know, recovery you usually get after a recession. And you know, the idea of a really terrible recession coupled with a jobless recovery, or a recovery with extraordinarily slow rate of job growth, it just kind of feels like the recession just stretches on and on. I expected not great news, but this is actually surprisingly bad. I mean, they actually thought, by some projections, they have unemployment going up to 9.1% at the beginning of next year. Like, I expected 2012 to be bad. What's kind of really ominous is they don't think 2013 is going to be that great either. perhaps we'll have a new president in 2013. Perhaps we'll see Congress enacting new policies in 2013. And perhaps the business community will see more stability out of Washington in 2013. The concept of a lost decade now suddenly doesn't seem quite so crazy when you start seeing numbers like this. I mean, this is really kind of ominous. And this, in a better world, this would be big news instead of whatever latest attack ad is going on in Florida or Obama singing perhaps a little better than I am at some fundraiser or whatever else is going on in the news. I mean, this is, you know, fairly terrible news. And oh, by the way, the $1.1 trillion deficit projection indicates that Obama has once again come nowhere near his promises of cutting the deficit in half for 5 years. By the way, when Obama made that promise in 2008 and early 2009, I cannot help but strongly suspect he was expecting his many listeners to conflate deficit and debt. Debt is the total amount that we owe to foreign creditors, to Social Security, to Medicaid, Medicare, all entitlement programs, all that stuff. And then there is the annual deficit, which is how much you run, you know, year to year. And basically the promise to cut the deficit in half, which was, you know, about a trillion or so. And I think a lot of people expected at that point, you know, what he was talking about was the $12 trillion debt to be cut in half. Unsurprisingly, neither has happened. We've seen a modest decrease in the annual deficit, but that basically comes from 2008 and 2009 having a huge surge because of the recession, because of TARP, and because of various other one-time expenses. So not good news in this, and in fact, probably surprisingly depressing news. Undoubtedly, we'll not hear anything of it. And, you know, the next round of bad economic numbers come out, I'm sure we'll be seeing the traditional unexpectedly adverb propping up in the reports.
They and Newt on the adverb front. Jim, it's interesting.
Profoundly unexpectedly. Frankly, bluntly, fundamentally unexpectedly.
That's right. Interesting to me that the economists and the experts expect things to pretty much stay the same when we got pretty much the same in terms of an agenda from the Obama administration, the State of the Union. Hard to believe that the results are likely to stay the same as well. I didn't see that one coming at all. On to martini number three now. Speaking of nothing changing, yesterday we were sort of kind of praising the leaders in Oakland, California for finally having the light dawn on them that the Occupy protesters were all about anarchy, destruction of private property, general lawlessness. Destroying City Hall was the last straw, and the mayor there is starting to crack down. And we were supposed to get some nice evictions in the two different locations in Washington, D.C. yesterday, McPherson Square, just a couple blocks from the White House, and Freedom Plaza, which is also a couple blocks from the White House, just from a different direction. And instead of evictions, Jim, basically the protesters said they weren't going anywhere, and because the D.C. government still seems to love them for some reason, the police just didn't really seem to enforce much. The only thing they're enforcing now is the so-called camping ban, even though they're letting all the tents stay, but you can't all sleep overnight at the same time. So people are allowed to sleep in shifts, and as long as you keep a little bit of your tent flap unzipped, apparently life is good. And so way to crack down on the protesters, way to follow the law. Apparently these people are the ones who are actually running Washington, D.C.
Does it seem like perhaps some sort of symbol of the state of the country that the statue of Major General James McPherson in the middle of the square is now covered with the Tent of Dreams? I got to salute the graphics department of the Washington Post. I believe his name is Patterson Clark, who drew a little map. It almost looks like Where's Waldo of what this McPherson Square looks like with the Tent of Dreams illuminated in blue in the middle. I also see some protesters were incognito Monday. I don't want to lose my job or be blacklisted. Look, if I were you guys, I wouldn't want to show my face either. You know, it's kind of an admission of what kind of judgment you have there. I see there's an Occupy house in this little map here, which is quite striking. Also a hand wash, which is good. I did not see that, Greg. I did not realize that they actually had washed hands.
Ooh, hygiene.
The Occupy protesters. Now, if we could only do something for the rest of the body, we would really have something. What I observe with this, and I was thinking about this in a slightly different context of, I think it was on the radio this morning, they were debating the border security, and I was observing, like, when you have a circumstance in which the enforcement of the laws is arbitrary and enforced sometimes, not enforced other times, and in cases where if you're with a popular enough protest or with, you know, if you're with an interest group that lawmakers don't really want to quibble with too much, that some, you know, baby boomer heart beats a little faster at the thought of a recurrence of Woodstock. Are we all a bunch of suckers and fools for obeying the law? I mean, is the law really that optional if you're if you've got the right kind of countercultural bona fides or something? It's kind of appalling. On the other hand, they're making the decision to sit out in the cold in McPherson Square, and I'm not. So, look, you know, when DC finds itself with more scoff laws in terms of, you know, everything from parking laws and everything else, it's because we keep seeing examples in which these things are not really, in which the laws are arbitrarily enforced, and you know, we get exemptions if lawmakers think you're cool enough. And of course, it makes a mockery of equal treatment under the law, and you know, that's where we are, and that's how General McPherson ends up being covered up by the Tent of Dreams. Everything we're supposed to stand for is being put over by this gauzy, happy, kumbaya-ish tarp, if you will. How appropriate that a movement driven in large part in opposition to TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, would end up being symbolized by everyone getting under a giant tarp. There you are, Greg. There's your metaphor of the week.
I think that's come full circle, which means it's time for them to go. And I think this is between D.C. and Oakland and some of these other cities, just more evidence as to why so many of these cities are in the trouble that they are, because they pick favorites, they don't enforce the law, and it's just ridiculous. Well, I'm just really glad that our offices are no longer near McPherson Square. They used to be half a block away, and now we're safely ensconced on the other side of the Potomac. So if there's a happy moral lining, at least for me, it's that. Jim?
Breathe deep.
Enjoy watching the election results tonight, and then get some sleep for a couple days. We'll talk to you later.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.